Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today for OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales. I'm Kelly Bloomer.
And I'm Tom Bloomer.
OK, Tom, you're our sales pro. In 30 words or less, can you tell us about this podcast?
I'm going to try. You know, us salespeople like to talk, Kelly.
You sure do.
All right, 30 words or less.
Can you do it?
Well, if you're a sales pro and you're looking to grow in your sales career, if you like good, lively sales discussion, I think this is going to be a show for you. I've walked your walk for over 30 years in sales. I've knocked on the doors and overcome the same obstacles I think you may be facing as a seller, a sales manager, and as a VP of sales. I currently help assess, build, and train high-performing media sales teams. Well, Kel?
Yeah, you really went over 30 words.
But I think it was good.
I do too.
Okay, so I hope our listeners will be all set. And hey, let's roll up our shirt sleeves and let's get at it.
So enjoy listening to Tom and his guests talk sales. So Tom, we're getting ready to kick off our new podcast series.
We are, Kelly, and we've been working on this since January, and I'm so excited. We are focusing on media sales over the next several weeks. We've lined up interviews with CEOs and founders of some of the strongest and most effective direct mail companies over the past 30 years. We're interviewing current sellers, people that are out there doing it today and have been doing it for a number of years. We've got something you're happy about. We got our first Talk It Out episodes coming up.
They should be a lot of fun.
They are. We're going to have a panel of people. And the one for media sales, we've got a panel of experienced media sellers. They're going to be talking about what sellers are going through and how to overcome it.
Very exciting. Can't wait. But it all starts with today's special episode. Tell us about it, Tom.
It is a special episode, and I'm really excited about it. We were so fortunate when we started last fall. I was able to reach out to some people that I'd worked with that I really respected what they have done. And three of our first guests last fall were in media sales.
That's right.
People that I'd worked with over the years. So we've made our first best of episode so that a lot of our current listeners weren't here last October. So they haven't heard some of this and their background in media sales, to me, this is the best way to kick it off. So it's a best of episode from Pat Weatherhold.
Nice.
Betsy Delisle, my first sales manager that I worked for.
Can't do it without her.
And Donna Baez.
Very nice.
They combined, they probably have 40 years in media sales. They're going to attack several different things that are important to sellers. And boy, they were a lot of fun. These are three of my favorite interviews.
I remember those interviews. We laughed a lot.
Yeah, we did. We laughed. We learned. We had a great time. And anyone who wasn't with us last October, I think they're going to be in for a treat.
All right. Well, let's start.
We're going to kick off media sales.
Sounds good. So let's listen as Tom and Betsy talk sales. In these excerpts, they'll talk about listening skills and asking the right questions. You'll learn how Betsy helped Tom early in his sales career to slow down and hang in the pocket.
Okay, so we're back with Betsy. And Betsy, I'm really looking forward to today's topic because as you remember, when I first got started, this was a lesson, boy, did I need to learn. And, you know, we spent a ride day. You came out and spent a whole day with me. And one of the first things you did after a call we were on is you sat me down outside of a patio furniture place. I can still picture it. You sat me down and said, Tom, you got to slow down. You're talking way too fast. You didn't listen to a thing that they said. And I still have nightmares. There are certain patio furniture I can't sit in to this day. But when you told me you really want to talk about listening, I knew that was important to you, and it's something that you started teaching me many years ago. So how do you want to get started? Let's share your message with our listeners today.
What I want to share about listening is that probably made the biggest difference for me when I started sales. You know, I started those outside sales like we talked about earlier, and I didn't have a whole lot of experience. So I, for one, would listen in my car to a sales tape or something that would teach me how to be a better salesperson. And what I found was that I was, as you were in the beginning, talking way too much and not doing enough listening. So over time, I've kind of felt that if you as a salesperson are doing more talking than your client is or your customer, you're doing too much talking. So that boils down to listening. what I want to point out about listening, I kind of liken it a little bit to sitting back in the pocket. Okay, so we're in football season right now. And a lot of you can relate to sort of, you know, sort of the football terminology of being in the pocket. Well, what that kind of refers to is if you're a quarterback, you are looking, you're observing, you're watching, you're seeing what is out there, where is the opening that you can find. And so it's the same thing in sales. You want to engage them and look for that opening. But let's not remember that another word for the pocket is also the tackle box. And if you rest too long in that pocket, you're going to get taken down.
Right.
Okay. So Absolutely. My message here is listen, but stay engaged and be observant of what's happening.
Very good. And I guess some of those business owners, they love to blitz you, right? So some of them, they're coming gunning for you. You better be ready.
Right. So you got to be careful that you don't get off topic. You know, you want to be able to lead them back to where you want them to be. Okay. So what I would like you to do and to practice now is to ask questions. Okay. So ask questions, but then the key is going to be let them answer the question. Don't answer for them and listen to what their answer is, because that quite often is going to tell you how to sell them. You know, you want to be looking for something that you can engage them with. Is it something in their business, something, a need that they might have? Another thing we tend to do quite often is when they fire an objection at us, we are ready. We're ready. We're like, you know, we're like that loaded gun. We're like ready to go. We've got all the answers because we've practiced this. But you might want to hold back a little bit. And instead of answering that objection right away, you might want to acknowledge the objection that they have. You know, I can appreciate that money's tight right now. This is like a big one that we get, you know. But I also know that you need whatever you're selling, advertising, whatever it might be. And what are you doing currently? How are you spending money? So you're kind of appreciating the situation that they're in, but coming back with another question, because many times these are false objections they bring up, or it's something to throw you off track. And we don't want to get into that, you know, firing back and forth. They ask, they give you an objection, you answer, then they give you another one and you fire back again.
That's like an argument, right? We're not going to win there, are we?
We're never going to win. We're not going to win. We're only going to win by bringing them over to our side, Tom.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love the way you talk about that, because, you know, so often it's when you delve just a little deeper, you know, they give you that objection. And like you said, we're primed to answer it. But if we follow it up and we dig a little bit deeper, that could change our answer and make it so much more effective. So I really like the way you talk about that.
Right. Absolutely. That's where you find that opening. That's where we talk about peeling that onion, finding out a little bit more about that business, because then they will probably tell you how to sell them in the end, what they need. And then there's where your opening really comes in.
And I think that's where I struggled in the beginning, especially being brand new into sales and so many others, because what are we doing? When we typically start, we get all these features and benefits, right? The company tells, hey, here's all the great things about us. So when that objection comes up or the question comes up, we go to what we've learned and what we know. We don't know all those little subtleties yet. So, you know, how does someone get that? Is there a way that they can kind of just be ready and understanding those subtleties?
I think so often, again, with the listening and sitting back, it gives you a chance to regroup yourself also, instead of firing back right away. It gives you the opportunity to really, you know, observe and collect and find out a little bit more about their business before delving right in with the answer to that objection. So I think they need to also know that you care truly about what their business is, and you don't necessarily have to. You know, I know a lot of times we're worried. We gotta sell them today, because if we don't, this is our big opportunity. And that's where your preparation comes in. I mean, I'm always one to be prepared, because you never know what's going to happen. But also, you know, having that opportunity to build a rapport and be able to come back to them with a great presentation is also part and parcel too.
Very true. So Betsy, I got to tell you, what I've learned over the years when it comes to listening, as you're talking about, is that's really the only way that the customer is going to let us understand what they need, you know, what they truly need, and what is the solution they're looking for. Do you have any particular questions or ways that you would go about that?
Well, I do, Tom, because, you know, many times when you're going in, and I can remember one in particular situation, I was actually going in to collect some money from a customer who had been in someone else's. And, you know, and one of the reasons he said he hadn't paid his bill was because he said it didn't work. Okay. What he had, it wasn't working for him. And so I said, you know what? And this became one of my questions that I felt was really key. I said, how about if you pretend, Mr. Customer, that I am your customer? Sell me. Why should I buy your product? And I want to understand why people would want to buy from you. And so, in other words, I'm kind of turning the tables to find out, how does he see himself? How does he view his business? Because let's face it, business owners love to talk about themselves. They like to talk about themselves. They like to talk about their business. And quite honestly, Tom, if they don't like to, then there's probably something wrong with that business if they don't get excited about their own business and their own company.
They better be excited about that.
Right. So that's key. That is key to finding out how they view themselves. Because sometimes the way someone views their own business isn't really the way other people see it. And you, as being the bystander now, and it, you're resting, again, you're resting, you're listening, because he's just selling you and telling you about his business. You're able to kind of look through, sort through that information and come back to him with a solution.
Yep, absolutely. Because that, and I don't know whether it's endorphins or what it is, Betsy, but what we found over the years is when we get them talking, and especially I like the way you said, tell me about your business, how would you sell to your customers? You get them excited. Now something goes on in their mind and they're into it. You know, they're not looking at you as somebody trying to sell me. They're into it. They're passionate. And boy, that excitement usually spurs along. And I love when they then look at you and they ask you a question that you know is a buying type question, and it works out. You know, I was just reading something the other day. I loved it. And I didn't know you were going to hit on it, but you just did in a great way. It said, sellers have to stop trying to sell their stuff and help the business owner they're with sell their stuff. And when you get to that point, as you just mentioned, it really changed the whole conversation.
You're right, Tom. It transitions the call, the sales call, into they're becoming excited. And if you also get that enthusiasm that they have and come up with, you know, an idea or a topic just based on what they've told you, it can make all the difference in making that sale. And that's what allows you to maybe set up a follow-up appointment. You know, it may not be a close that moment, but you know what, you're saying, you know what, you're giving me ideas here. This is great. I now understand your business. Let me put together something for you that encapsulates what you're trying to accomplish. And they become excited because you're kind of putting that carrot out there. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, sometimes, you know, we have to know when to close, but we also need to know when it's important to come back with some real meat for this particular customer.
Because, I mean, they're speaking to us because they want a solution, right? And in most cases, they're looking for someone to help them, and you're directing it so that they see you care. You're asking the right questions and getting them as part of that solution. So it's so critical for people to realize that. So Betsy, our first question that was sent in for you today, in listening, you obviously have a lot of confidence. Did you always have it, or do you have it if someone is there right now and they just don't quite have that strong confidence. Any way that you can help them, any takeaway for them to build that confidence?
Absolutely, because you're right, Tom. I never dreamed that sales was going to be my career. But once I got the taste of it and knew I liked it, I knew I had to develop the skills. So I think confidence comes by, one, knowing your product, and then also by studying. And just like you're doing now, you are listening to a podcast about sales. So the more that you can, you know, read a book, listen to a podcast, you know, research this, and then put those things into practice, is going to build your confidence. Because as you do this, you're going to find you get success. And when you get success, that is going to breed confidence. Whatever it is, I mean, I used to listen to tapes in the car before I would go in on a sales call and then try and practice those things. The other thing, I love music. So you put on a good tune, I'm a Philly girl, I listen to Rocky, and I'm going up those stairs, man, and I can do anything. So I get myself, you know, jazzed up with a good tune before I go in, and man, nothing can take me down. So, you know, whatever it is on a personal level, that's what you have to do.
Absolutely. That is great advice. And you got me thinking when you were talking about the Rocky music. I was debating with someone recently, and they were saying you never practice on a prospect. They were like, you just don't do that. And I got to tell you, Betsy, I practiced on prospects all the time. If I had a 10 o'clock really key appointment, I always would do a couple calls before that just to get that Rocky excitement. I'd have the music, be listening, just to get going, because that, to me, that's what made me more confident, is walking in a little bit motivated and not the other way.
So let's listen as Tom and Pat talk sales. For this segment, we'll listen as Pat explains what business owners lose sleep over, and you'll also enjoy their discussion on what really makes a good sales rep.
All right, Pat, I told you we're going to debate today, but I'm going to let you pick the first topic. What do you want to talk about today?
Oh, good. Okay, Tom. So what do you think most sales reps would say is the thing that keeps their customers awake at night? What do you think the number one thing is?
Well, they need more, they want more business, they want more clients, they want more sales. It's gotta be more sales, right?
Wrong.
I wish I could say that was the first time you told me that in 25 years, Pat.
So it's funny because, you know, I recently read this study. It was the National Federation of Independent Business Owners, and they asked this question to thousands of business owners, and that's actually number 45 on the list. More sales.
45.
I was shocked.
Wow.
I was shocked. Well, okay. So, what are some other things you think that?
Wow, now you got me thinking. I'm trying to figure out how a business owner had time to give 45 answers that were more than that. Maybe cash flow? Is they're concerned about cash flow?
Well, that's a biggie, but it's actually number 25.
Okay, I'm getting better. I'm going in the right direction. Wow. Well, was this article before the pandemic? I guess the uncertainty of the economy now.
Yes, okay. So that was a biggie. That I think was in the top 10 somewhere, uncertain economic conditions. Has anything else come to mind since COVID?
No, why don't you? So what were the top ones? Because now you kind of blew my mind with sales being at 45.
So uncertain economic conditions and the amount of federal income tax they pay on their business, oppressive government regulations.
Wow, which was for small and mid-sized business owners?
Yes. Well, think about it during COVID. Think, what if you're a restaurant owner and they're telling you can't be open? Then they're telling you can be open, but at 25% capacity, which, you know, doesn't cut it for you. Or now you can be at 50% capacity, but that doesn't cut it for you. And then the looming, you know, we have looming, you know, threats of more shutdowns if the cases keep rising. So that's right now. That's really, that was number two.
That's keeping everybody up right now.
Yeah, it is. And the top one, which after I read it, I thought, why didn't I think about that? The top one is actually the cost of their employees' health care that they have to pay. That's the number one.
Yeah, and nobody knows for sure where that's headed at this point. So
right. So with a business owner having so many things on their mind, that's really unrelated to more sales or more revenue.
Well, unless I'm selling HR services or health coverage, or unless I'm a tax attorney, how do I get my product or service to be relevant for them?
Right. I mean, and how do you help them have an easier business life? No matter what you're selling, no matter what product or service you're selling, how do you help make your customer's life easier? And that's kind of my passion for small, you know, my passion is small business and helping small business owners. And that's kind of what keeps me up at night, is how do I best help those business owners?
You know, it's interesting. I was doing another taping recently, and we were talking about how to bring good value and being a resource for your clients. So I would assume this would be great information for our listeners. Mm-hmm. That if you're looking for a way to be valuable to your clients or your prospects, it's not always just about the features and benefits of your mm-hmm. product or service, but you could be sharing other things like this that can help them. You
know, exactly. Sharing information, I think, is extremely important. And I'm going to talk about that a little more as we, you know, move through the different segments.
Hey, listeners, it's Kelly Bloomer here to tell you the show is brought to you by Bloomer Associates. If you visit our website found in your show notes, you'll find we offer sales training, talent assessment for hiring and team development, and individual coaching for sales pros and managers. We bring over 30 years in media sales and leadership experience. If you enjoy listening to OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales, ask how our team can work with your sales team for virtual meetings, roundtables, and motivational seminars. You can contact us through our website or call today, 919-267-9871. Now back to our show.
Okay, so Pat, yeah, let's jump right into it. So as we talked earlier, you've got over a 30-year sales career, East Coast, West Coast, all kinds of roles, worked with, been a sales rep and worked with and trained a lot of sales reps. So what makes that difference? You talk about those attributes. What are the key things that take someone from being good to being a really great seller?
Well, there's some ones that everybody knows about. But one of my favorite ones, these are not in any order, by the way. I'm not saying this one's first, but one of the ones I love is hunger. Okay. And Tom, you know what I mean by hunger, don't you?
Well, Pat, I'm always hungry. but I'm assuming you're talking about that desire for achievement or the competitive juice, something along those lines?
The need to sell beyond the money that they're going to earn. The hunger to be the best, to sell more than anyone, to be competing with themselves all the time, you know, hunger. That's one of my favorite ones.
Go ahead. I was going to say, and you know, that's hard to measure, right? So I'm sure you've hired a number of people over the years. Mm-hmm. No matter what you see on the resume, is there a way to know if they have that?
I think sometimes you can pick it up in a live interview while you're interviewing a prospective salesperson, but I really don't think you can get the full awareness of how hungry they are until they start performing or not performing.
And it's hard to, we really can't teach that, right? That's just...
I think, no, some of these are kind of innate things that people are born with. Another one now, here's one that you can, I think, you can nurture along, is confidence. And I've actually had customers say to me, or say to good and great salespeople as they were buying from us, that one of the reasons they bought was because of how we carried ourselves. And that not just our communication skills that showed confidence in our product or service, but actually how we physically carried ourselves with confidence. And those are things you can practice. You can practice, you can fake it till you make it with confidence. Because you might be at a new job selling a new product and you don't have the confidence right away, but you can appear to have the confidence.
Yeah, I think you can, but that's also maybe an attribute, because mm-hmm. some people it's the opposite. You know, they until they're 100% confident, they just can't even act it. It's right. It's tough to say, but I agree with you that you may not be 100% confident, but if you know how to act and portray that,
yeah,
it definitely comes across confidence. That way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I've been doing is talking with a lot of people in HR that, because right now there's so many people out of work.
Right.
There's a number of people. You can't even imagine how many people are working, but in 2020, they're going to sleep every night, not knowing for sure if they're going to mm-hmm. be working in 4 months or 6 months.
Right.
And one of the things we talk about is companies bring people in. And when they do get someone, they're not really, stoking that confidence. They don't onboard well. They don't mm-hmm. show them enough about the training. You could have good people. You could have hungry
right.
people, but they're just not getting that confidence.
Which is the reason that good sales management, as you and I both know and learned through the years, is paramount.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because my sales manager in radio, he was a good sales manager, and he instilled confidence in me really when I didn't have much. And I think that really helped a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, you know, you've seen one market, you could have the same exact product
yeah.
in one area, it's performing yeah. one way, and just one right. town over, not the same.
It's, you know? Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Of course, the other one's enthusiasm. It kind of goes along with confidence a little bit. You know, if you're enthusiastic about your product, your customers will be enthusiastic about your product. And I think that's something that's hard to fake. If you don't believe in your product and you're out there trying to push it, I think it comes through. I think lack of enthusiasm comes through.
I was just talking with someone today that's in advertising, and they're relatively new in it, and you know, struggling as so many people are right now, and we're talking some things through, but I know they're going to be successful because they had that belief in their product and mm-hmm. and they have that desire to do well, and they cared about people, they
right.
cared about clients, and I think that's where a lot of that enthusiasm or motivation comes from. And there's a lot of ways for people to motivate themselves, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, one of the goals of this podcast is that people listening, you know, get excited, have fun with it, and get a little bit motivated, and maybe they get jazzed up to make 3 or 4 more prospecting calls today, you know, because of it.
Exactly. And that's why I love, when I was doing sales training, you know, you and I both did a lot of training for Clipper in our sales mm-hmm. training, and we had certain topics that we did. And I always loved to tell stories, real on the street with Clipper customer stories. And the reps, that they loved that the most, because it showed them what really can happen out there. And one of my favorite enthusiasm stories, and I think you'll probably recognize this once I start talking about it, is a sales manager whose name is Susan. And she had a customer, and it was a potentially big customer. It was kind of a smallish customer yet. It was a pizza, and it was a franchise deal. And they had like 34 locations, so it was sizable.
That's a good size.
That's a good size. And she just felt like she wasn't getting enough from them, and she felt like she could help them more. And at that time, I was doing our specialty products division. So, you know, I was really pushing postcards. And that's a product I believed in more than any product I have ever sold. And she asked me to come down and go in there with her. And we went in, and he had said no to postcards multiple times. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I learned, and here, this all ties in with how to be a go from a good to great salesperson, is talking about what's going on with his business today. He was the marketing director, and what his short and long-term goals were. But one of the things, and he kept saying no to postcards, but Susan and I were so enthusiastic about the postcards. And what we learned in that sales call was he had 3 underperforming stores. And normally you kind of stay away from the underperforming stores, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I had that much confidence and enthusiasm, and so did Susan, about the postcard product, that we proposed that for his 3 underperforming stores. And I said to him, if we can get these underperforming stores to have double digit increase in sales, would you then be willing to look at postcards for all your other stores? And he's like, well, sure. So now what I had to do was cut him a deal. And it was a sweetheart of a deal for him. But we did a 10,000 postcard mailing for each of those 3 underperforming stores. 1 store's sales the first week were up 46 or something percent. Another one's was 38%, and another one was 28%. He was blown away. And he came back and he became one of our biggest postcard customers in the whole company. But what he said was he would not have gone for that deal because he still had to spend a sizable amount of money to do that test for his underperforming stores. But he said it was our enthusiasm for the product that really got him to go with that test.
Yeah, no, it makes it a testament to, like you said earlier, you're a risk taker. So you took a risk with the offer and things, but yeah, that enthusiasm, and I wasn't there obviously, but I'm guessing that a lot of that came from your experience and your confidence with those postcards. As you said, that was, you thought that was the best product. You had 100% belief in it.
Right.
You know, to me, that's where those first 3 things you've mentioned, they all kind of tie together because, you know, when somebody is hungry and confident and they know that product's going to work, that's when they get very enthusiastic, and customers will feed off that. They really will.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if we move along, some of the other attributes that I think make a good to great salesperson, one is resilience. You know, in this day and age, if you're not resilient, I think you ought to pack it in and maybe do something else, because there's, you know, there's going to be downtimes, there's going to be some flatlining here and there, even if you're a great salesperson. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And this would be the one, when you were talking about some of the different things today that we were going to get to, this was the one to me, which is great for the successful ones, but this was one of the biggest indicators of people who not only wouldn't be good, but would be out of the business very quickly, because they could be great communicators, hungry, enthusiastic, but if they weren't resilient, then our type of advertising sales was just not going to work for them.
Or really any kind of sales, if you're not resilient, and if you can't take the rejection, or if you take the rejection personally. I never ever took a customer rejecting me personally. And I think that helped me be resilient and hang in there.
So. I took it personally, Pat, until I could get even. And I got even by getting them advertising with me. So what's after resilience? So we definitely, we're not debating much, Pat. So
far, we're in agreement on a lot. Multitasking, I think, is a big one in today's complex, you know, market with everything that's going on and social media. And I mean, think about the 25 years we've known each other, and think about the simplicity of our sales job 25 years ago versus the complexity of our sales job now.
Yeah, I'm very thankful I got into it when I did, because it's far more complex now. And, you know, back in the day, I can remember we had about 2 dozen key objections that we had to overcome. So that's it. I mean, every month I'd be out training. Here's how you overcome X and Y and Z. And I only had about 2 dozen I had to overcome. I only had to understand maybe about 30 to 40 key types of business, because that's what pretty much bought our product. And we had 1 product to sell, right?
Right.
That was it. So it has changed, and they better be able to multitask, and they better be able to bring value in a lot of different ways.
Exactly. And that brings up, like, adaptability. You know, if you're not adaptable in the environment that's out there now, you're going to drown. You have to be able to be adaptable. And, you know, some of the changes that come along, I mean, let's face it, you and I have been through a lot, you know, over the past 25 years, a lot of changes with our company, a lot of changes with products. If we weren't adaptable, we wouldn't be sitting here talking right now. I think adaptability is very important.
Absolutely, and especially in 2020, and right. And not just with sales, but on almost every type of job out there. I mean, people are working from home now that never had to. Mm-hmm. You know, my son works; he's an essential worker in a grocery store environment. Mm-hmm. He's wearing a mask for 9 hours every day. You have to, you know,
yeah.
And you have to adapt. You have to adapt. You have to know how to deal with customers that are also following the rules and those that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we go back to that list of what keeps small business owners up at night, finding employees that are going to be adaptable has got to be one of the key ones for them.
Oh, that was actually number 10.
See, so, I'm getting bet by the end of this podcast, yeah. I'm going to have that list nailed down, Pat.
Yeah, number 10.
Excellent.
So, of course, communication skills, that's pretty much, you know, a good one. Have to be a good communicator to be a good salesperson or a great salesperson.
Yeah.
Honesty, I think, is a big one.
If they're going to do it for a while.
Yeah.
I've seen some that come in that aren't, right. and it would drive you crazy, especially mm-hmm. when you had a product that you knew that there was no reason to not be honest. Right.
Right.
You know, just be honest, tell them what you can and can't do. But those that weren't, they don't last very long. Because they're going to run into problems.
Well, now we get to the drum roll. My number one attribute of getting from good to great, and the main topic today.
All right, I'm going to try to edit in a drum roll. So when you listen to the actual episode, we'll see how that worked for us.
It's empathy and or a caring attitude. Is number one. And I could sit here and tell you thousands of stories where that trait helped me or helped a great salesperson sell. And so when I went back to regional sales, and I was out in California every week and riding with a lot of different salespeople. We had about 40 different salespeople in California at that time. I decided that as I was riding with them, I was going to ask customers. I was just going to come out and ask them. And I'm talking about not prospects. I'm talking about good, loyal customers that had been with us for a while.
Okay.
And so I asked them, I said, why do you continue to buy from me or from, you know, Joe or from Susan or whoever? I said, even though my product's more expensive than other products that are just like mine, or maybe it's not always your best option for your business, yet you continue to buy, why? And this all ties back to what we just talked about. The things that were on the list outside of the product working for them, it was all about the salesperson and the relationship with the salesperson. And it was about the confidence, the enthusiasm, but the number one thing that came up, which blew me away because I thought this was it, but I really didn't think they were going to say it, mm-hmm. was that salesperson truly cared about their business and took a genuine interest in their business. That was number one.
So Pat, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm in complete agreement with you. As always, for the past 25 years, we've been in complete agreement pretty much all along.
All right, Tom.
Absolutely. But I 100% in agreement with you on this. And I want to ask it in this way, because this is something I noticed over the years, even with people that do care about their customers, right? There's a lot of reps that care, but then there's those that, you know, what do they say? There's talking and then there's action.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one thing to say, you know, I love my customers and that, you know, I care about them. But then there's the sales rep that is bringing them more information, spending extra time on their ad, you know, remembers the kids' birthdays or what they were doing, or mention, you know, drops off a book, or, you know, I had some sales reps, they wouldn't spend a penny out of their own pocket for holiday gifts for their clients. And then others that would buy things all the time for their clients because they knew they were building a long-term relationship. What are some of the ways that you've seen good reps? Like, how do you the customer saw it. Mm-hmm. What did they see? What were those reps doing that showed the customer how much they cared?
Well, early on in the customer relationship with the employee, they didn't vomit their product all over the customer.
That's always appreciated.
They asked the right questions. They showed an interest in the history of the customer's business and ownership of that business. They showed, you know, they asked the right questions. They talked to the customer about their short-term goals and their long-term goals and what were the issues they were having at that time. And they didn't talk necessarily those things around their product. So our product happened to be advertising. So, you know, the last thing that person did was ask about advertising, because if you do, then you're just every other dog and shoney, you know, pony show salesperson. You know, right. They showed an interest by asking the right questions, which, you know, is a big pet peeve of mine also, that salespeople don't do enough of. So by doing that in the beginning, they showed an interest and a caring attitude. But as the relationship went on, you mentioned some of the things, you know, spending extra time to help the customer, you know, it depends what you're selling, but in this case, ads, you know, helping them put a good ad together, you know, researching some things for their business or industry, coming across information just in their daily business that they share with the customer, you know, dropping off an article, a book, sending a link on email. I thought you might be interested, you know, to read this article, that kind of thing. Here, you know, how about following up quickly on any client communication? That's a big one.
Yeah.
I had a lot of customers complain, you know, about reps who they'd call for some, maybe they wanted to buy, you know, or maybe they had an issue. And it would take days for the reps to get back. So I know this is going to sound terrible to that salesperson out there, but my rule for getting back to a customer was 1 hour from the time you received the message. Now, that's a little stringent, I know, but I put that on myself. Now, there's times you can't. Maybe you're in with another customer and you're there longer than an hour. You know, absolutely, there are going to be times, but it shouldn't take days. You know, it shouldn't take more than a few hours at least. So that to me is a biggie. I don't know if you agree with that one.
You know, I do. And it's said you, for you and I, it seems like a basic thing, right? On how important it is. But I think so many reps, they don't realize you don't have to have the answer in an hour. You don't have to solve the whole world's problems and just get back to, hey, I got it. Let me look in. Let me find out.
Exactly.
You know, so that somebody, you know, just think of ourselves. How often I'll send emails sometimes on something that's relatively important, and 3 days later, I'm, hey, did you get my email?
Yeah.
And that's just, that should never have to happen, right?
And that, I have a story around that one too. And I know that you know this to be true, because when I became, you know, when I was sales administration or when I was sales operations, or even when I had sales reps, reps would call me. And they'd be shocked because I answered the phone. They'd say, oh my God, you're picking up the phone. Or they'd say, you always pick up the phone. Or if you don't pick up the phone, you always get right back to me within like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. And they thought this was like amazing. And to me, it was like, those salespeople, when I was a VP of sales, those salespeople were now my customers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, communicating with your customers on a timely basis. And again, you hit a key point. You don't have to have the answer for them right then, but they so appreciate that you got back to them right away and said, oh, I can't answer that question now, but I'll find out.
Yeah, so. No, it's so important. I remember when you switched roles after you came out of the VP of the specialty products, mm-hmm. and somebody new went into that spot, myself included, 6 months later, we're calling you when we had serious dilemmas because we knew you'd at least answer the phone and could give us some help, because somebody in particular was, you know, a week later still hadn't responded. But, You know, it also goes to me what I saw with a lot of salespeople, and hopefully salespeople listening today will realize, if the only time you see your client is when you need something, you know, if you're only seeing them when you need a contract signed or to pick up a check or to work on something, you could have them for an account for 5 years. You're not building that relationship and showing them you care.
Great point.
When do you go to see them when you're not there in a sales position? And some sales reps, they don't want to take, how do you have the time for that? And my thing was, how do you not have the time?
Especially, you do have the time.
Yeah,
you know, you're probably seeing someone, you're canvassing a neighborhood, or you have another customer that's in the neighborhood with another one, you know, you can't stop in, even if you're just putting your head in the door, you can.
On the attributes, one thing we haven't talked about is that personal accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was doing it, it didn't matter if there was a mistake or there was an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I had to deal with it. This mm-hmm. is my account. This is my commission, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about starting up and you're on strict commission, only commission, or commission being an important part of your compensation. How do you leave that in other people's hands?
Right.
You know, I'd have sales reps lose a $100,000 account, which in our world, that was a big account.
Yeah.
Now, in some areas, it's not. But for us, if somebody was going to sell $500,000 a year, $100,000 a year account, that's a big account to them. And there'd be an issue, and I'd be on the phone with the salesperson, and they'd be telling me how this department cost them this, or this department did this. And I'd look at them and say, no, they didn't. You have one $100,000 account. How are you not involved? How do you not make sure these things happen? Because I never lost a $100,000 a year account because of a mistake somebody else made.
Right.
Because that was I was involved. And I think sales reps need to understand if this is their livelihood, boy, you better take accountability and be involved on every step of the way.
Hey, it's Larry Long Jr. from Durham, North Carolina. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
All right, Donna, we're going to really get into the key message right now. And I got to tell you, I was very excited when we spoke a few days ago and you told me about the message that you wanted to bring to our listeners today. Years ago, when I first got started, it seemed like everything was about features and benefits. And today, it's not that. It's really trying to solve problems for people. Why don't you tell me, what is that message you hope to share?
Well, the message is that you need to sell the problem you solve, not the product you have. Okay, because the product can be great, but the client might not need it. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot of hustle and follow-up to gain a new client. Okay. So it's important to the success of both the client and the sales rep to make sure that what is being pitched or sold is the best product to meet the needs and goals of the client and not your needs. And the reason why I say this is I've spent a lot of time out in the field with reps on calls with clients, and they walk in, and before we walk in, I'm like, okay, so where are we going with this? And the rep would be like, well, I have a page I have to sell, so I'm going to go sell them this page. I'm like, well, is that what they need? And they go, well, I don't know. I haven't spoken to them yet, but I need to sell this page. I'm like, okay. So I have a conversation. Okay. I said, so yeah, you have to question and find out what their needs are, because you can sell them that page in an area, a small little area, but they could be a home improvement business that needs this much area. So that ad's going to come out and they're going to get no response. And then you're backpedaling.
All right, Donna. So let's start right in the beginning there. I think we need to understand the why, because I believe in their heart, every sales rep of any company wants to sell what's good for their client. You know, we all care about our client. They want to sell them the right product or service. Where does it go wrong and why?
Well, there's a lot of places where it can go wrong. The rep could have a quota, right? The manager's telling him you have to sell this much of this product. Well, they need to meet that quota, they feel, in order to, you know, have their job or whatever pressures the manager's putting on them. So they're going to call with the intention of selling a specific product instead of filling a need. They might feel uncomfortable with some of the products and the pricing. Maybe they feel that the pricing is too high, they're scared, so they're going to just go in and pitch the cheapest product to make a sale.
Boy, that confidence is key, right? If I've seen it for so many years, they could have a perfect product for someone, but if they're not confident in that product, it's like they don't even want to begin discussing it.
Right. There could be a sales contest tied into a certain product, and they want to win the contest and win the money that's tied into the contest. Right. So now they're just in it for them.
It's bad to win a sales contest, Donna?
It's not bad to win a sales contest, but if you're making a sale based on trying to win a sales contest, that's bad.
Yeah. Short-term versus long-term, right?
Correct. Or, you know, maybe the rep just doesn't have a good understanding of the entire product suite. So they're only going to offer what they understand.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of times where it seems like management is causing part of these problems. So whether it's the way the quotas are being set up, the contest that's being run, maybe some pressure. Do you see a lot of times that reps are just doing where they've been led to take someone?
Absolutely, I do. And I would, you know, talk to them. And, you know, you talk to the rep and you go, look, management has a number. They need to hit this number. Okay. And it's based on this product, and this product. So if they see that one of those products is falling short, they're going to put the pressure on that. Okay. So, but if you look at it this way, and if you just focus on being customer centric and doing the right thing by the customer, number one, you're going to have more sales. You're going to have more long-term sales. Right. So now the numbers are going to go up and they're going to stay up. Right. So what if you have, say, four different products? OK, so you got one that's up here, which the revenue is good, but you got a couple down here that aren't so good. But if you were able to increase some of these, that kind of will take some of that profit, can help with that one. And you might not make it on every level, but the overall number could be there, right? Which is going to make everybody happy.
So Donna, let's talk about pipeline, because what I've seen a number of times is reps will be pushing that wrong product. You mentioned earlier in a magazine sale, they have one page left. So they're taking you today to see client X. I need to finish that last page. Is some of the problem here because we don't have enough prospects in our pipeline that we're putting the people in the wrong spots?
Absolutely, 100%. Again, I've spent so many hours in cars with reps, and, you know, I could be in Chicago 1 week and then, you know, 6 weeks later, I'm back in Chicago, back in the car with that same rep. And guess what? He's taking me to the same people, the exact same people, trying to get them to buy, because, you know, there definitely needs to be more in the pipeline, and it has to be a continuing, you know, top of mind awareness. I need to make a certain amount of calls a week to keep my pipeline filled. Yes, absolutely. That is one of the biggest problems.
Yep. I saw that with a number of experienced sales reps when we first added some digital product mix into our portfolio. They were going to the same print clients for some of the digital and not realizing, no, I need some digital prospects in my pipeline that really want and can benefit from this. All right, Donna, we all know how difficult it is to make a sale, right? This is not an easy profession for people. At the end of the day, we made a sale. So it may not have been the perfect product, but maybe we won that contest. Maybe we develop a relationship. What can really go wrong if we sell that wrong product to the client?
There's a lot that can go wrong, Tom. So you walk into the client, you're all excited, you have his magazine, and you drop it off in front of him. Okay. And then about a week later, week goes by, and he calls you up and he goes, did my magazine mail out? I didn't get any calls. I got nothing. Okay. Okay, let's give an example. It's a roofer. Okay, it's a roofer. And you put him into a full page ad in a magazine that mails to 25,000 homes. Okay. That client needs to be in about 500,000 homes in an area. Okay. Because he doesn't need a whole lot of business to pay for his ad, but he needs to be in front of the right people.
Not everybody needs a roof fixed today.
Correct. And, you know, you got to look at the demographics and where he put them. Did they have a lot of apartments? You know, there's a whole lot of things that can go wrong. So now you go, well, okay, I can put you in this product over here. Why didn't you put me there to begin with? You know, oh, well, it was already closed out or whatever. Well, then you wait. You wait until you can get the client into the correct product, because it's a lot better than backpedaling. And you lost faith. Now you're not the expert anymore, because you're supposed to be going in there as the expert on this business as far as what they need to increase their return on investment.
So right? You're going to lose some serious credibility if you start them off wrong.
Yep. Or you might lose them for good. Right. He might just say, you know what, so-and-so came in, your competitor. I think I'm going to give them a shot. Okay. Now, how did you sell them? Did you sell them on a one-time? Did you sell them on a contract? Because if you put them in the full page ad in that little area on a contract, now you got to cancel that contract, because now, you know, going forward, that's not going to work for him. So if he doesn't agree to go in, you've lost that potential business. So now your manager is going to look at you and go, well, I just lost how much revenue off the bottom line for the year, right? Because you sold them incorrectly. If you didn't have the right product for him at the time, because maybe it was past deadline for that issue, you wait and you go and you put them in the next time and you be honest with them. And that's where you earn your credibility. And that's where you get them the result.
All right, Donna. So we know we need to sell them the right product. We know why, and we know what can go wrong, but how can we best determine what product or service is right for each client?
Okay, so the number one rule is don't assume. Number two is questions, questions, questions. It is really important that you have a conversation and you ask open-ended, challenging questions that really get the business owner thinking. And you have to listen with the intent to understand what their needs are. One of the things that I learned, and I thought this was really cool, I read this somewhere and it actually works, is when you walk into a sales call and it's a new call, you've never been there before, sit down in front of them, ask if you can take notes, and just have a blank sheet of paper, okay? And the goal of this blank sheet of paper is you ask questions, open-ended, thought-provoking questions that you take notes on. And as you're taking those notes, it's kind of generating more questions for you. So a lot of times what salespeople do is when they get in front of a client, they're too busy thinking about the next question and they're not listening to the answer from the client. So then there's this disconnect. In the end, when you try to present something and you're totally off base of where the client is, right?
Another great way to lose credibility quick, right? When they realize you weren't even listening to their answers.
Yeah. You know, and summarize what they're saying, you know, let them know you're listening, give them a nod head, give them Okay. So what you're saying is this, do I understand this correctly? Let them know that you are actually paying attention to them and they will keep talking. And, you know, the more that they talk, the more this information that you're gathering is going to give you the tools necessary, or they're telling you their story so you can, you know, give them the happy ending with the right product. But it's actively listening with the intent to understand what their needs are, and then present your product. And if it's more expensive and out of the budget range of the client, it's your job then to educate the client and show him the value of why he needs to do this.
All right. So Donna, one of the things that we talked about in your opening is all the different places that you've worked. And it really got me thinking for our segment today on kind of debating different things in life as sales. I wanted to talk about the different regions. Where is it harder to sell, easier to sell? What are some of the things that you've seen? Have you noticed any difference in the different markets?
You know, It's funny because the 20, 21 years I was with Clipper and all the different markets I went to working with reps, they would say, oh, this market is so hard. You don't understand. And we have this and this market's hard. You know, you go somewhere else and they're this market's hard. And, you know, I talk to them, have a conversation. And why do you feel that way? What is, you know, because every market has their own nuances. So South Florida was very fast paced, a lot of competition, you know, so I would get reps going, there's too much competition here. Well, that's a good thing. Competition is great because that means that the business owners are spending money advertising. So when people see this, they're going to try to start their own publication, right? So having competition is very good. You as a sales rep just have to know how to speak and ask the right questions to show the business owner that you're prospecting how he can gain market share by going with your publication, right? He's got to steal share away from the other publications or the other businesses by being in your publication. When I was in South Carolina, it was very easy to get into the door to speak with people the first time. Super easy. I thought this is a piece of cake, right? And they would talk to you for an hour. They would have great conversations, but they wouldn't buy. They wouldn't. It's a slower paced market. You're in the South. You know, they're very slow to move. No competition. That was the big key. There was no competition. Why was that? Well, they take so long to make a decision that it was just harder in that respect. But once you got them on board and you put some good ads out there and a good program for them, they stayed with you. So South Carolina was a lot harder to get the initial sign-ons, but they lasted longer. And they were very long-term. Where in South Florida, you know, it was, you walk in the door and Joe from Joe's Pizza is like, oh, hey, tell me. He goes, I only got 2 minutes. What do you got? Is it better than what I'm doing now? And is it cheaper? And it was like bang, 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 right? Mm-hmm. So you had to change your style. So when I was in the South, it was very quick. When I was in South Carolina, it was very slow and meticulous and very, you know, in-depth questioning and conversation. So, and then in South Florida, because there was so much competition, they didn't want to sign long-term contracts. So it was a lot of 1, 2, and 3 timers. And then they would jump to the next thing that they thought was great. So every market has positives and negatives. I did not find one market easier than another market. It's just how you approach the market. And if you can identify where the differences are and change your selling style and questioning to kind of reflect that style of market, that's where you're going to have your success.
Yeah. And I think that's the key. You have to adjust, like you said, to what that market is doing. So the Northeast, I sold there for a long time and I loved your story because they weren't there, most of them, to make a friend. You know, what do you have? How much? How are you going to help me? I got to go do something else. And I managed out in the Phoenix and Tucson, Arizona areas for a while. And it took me, it was a culture shock because there people just wanted to, hey, sit down, tell me your story. Let's talk. Very friendly. No intention of buying from me, right? They knew they weren't going to buy anything, but they still wanted to spend time with me. Your pizza guy in New York, he's not going to spend time with you if he doesn't think he's going to buy from you. So interesting, and I'm sure we'll hear from some of our listeners where they feel it's easier or more difficult to sell in. So that's it. That's today's show. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to subscribe and follow. We hope you make us a part of your week, and don't forget to share with your friends and coworkers.
Should we mention the website?
Sure, the website, okboomerteachmesales.com.
And where can they engage with us?
LinkedIn at Thomas J. Bloomer.
We hope to see you there.